Welcome back to the Final Four is not on the schedule. He is Rob. I am Cameron. And we are back after the Western Michigan game where Michigan State beat them 90-46, Rod. So this one went quite a bit better than last year's game against Western. What's your overall take coming out of this one? A lot of good stuff to talk about in terms of really everyone on the team had some sort of contribution for the most part.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know, and I've already seen it on the Spartan Mag board, the chorus of the clueless. Oh, it's only Western. Well, here's the thing. When you play a bad opponent, and Western was that, certainly after B. Artis White got hurt. I mean, let's not – and that happened very early. And once it happened, you saw why – they were such a bad – we talked about it in the preview. This is a bad offensive team last year, and that was with B. Artis White. Without him, boy, it's a rough go.
Yeah.
And you saw that. But you know what? Here's the thing. When you're facing a bad team, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to pound them. Mm-hmm. That's what Michigan State did. I think in retrospect – I just posted this on that message board, but I'll say it here as well. I think in retrospect – when you look back at last winter, so the pre-Big Ten season, I'm going to include myself in this category, but I think most MSU fans and most national analysts were fall into it as well, that people got blinded a little bit by the way that MSU handled Notre Dame, an ACC team, and went into Cameron and beat Duke. But the way that they played against teams like Western and U of D and Oakland actually should have, in retrospect, we can look back at it and say that should have told us that there was something not quite right with this team. Because I'm not knocking any of those programs, but let's be honest. Those are teams you should handle fairly easily. Now, they ended up beating Western, I think, by 18 last year. But they pulled away, as I recall, they pulled away late.
And it was
kind of a similar thing against U of D and Oakland, too. Those games were games. They were competitive far longer than they should be. And that was a sign. So at the very least, you should celebrate this, that they did exactly what they're supposed to do against a bad opponent. They blew them out. You know? And as you say, pretty much across the board, guys made contributions. I mean, we're going to talk about it, and there's really almost everybody. There are positive things we can mention in this game. And I think as a team, they did some of the things that I wanted to see. So, overall, a really good night.
And they played hard the whole time.
Yes.
You know, there was no let up. And I guess you'd start at Gabe Brown. He's the leading scorer. 23 minutes, 17 points, 7 rebounds, 5 for 10 from the floor. He missed all 3 3-pointers, but hit all of his free throws, 7 for 7, steal, and a couple turnovers.
And honestly, he probably should have been better than that. He had a couple of really strange, inexplicable misses at the rim where he just sort of lost control of the ball. And as you say, 0 for 3 on threes, you'd expect a shooter like Gabe on a bad night is going to hit one of those. So he probably should have broken 20. But there was a lot to like about his game. 4 offensive rebounds. And again, I understand. Small opponent, not a great opponent. I don't care. You rebound that way against anybody, and you've at least worked. And I thought Gabe played very, very hard. So that was encouraging to see. After the Kansas game, you know, he was kind of in and out, which is what we've said a lot about Gabe Brown over his career.
Yeah.
This is the Gabe Brown they need, one who's energetic and engaged. He only played 23 minutes. You know, that's the thing. You look up and down the roster, the guy that played the most minutes is Max Christie at 28. Gabe was second at 23. That's not how it's going to be, I don't think, maybe even starting next week against Butler. But you know, the productivity on a per-minute basis, really good.
Yeah, and that's what's so encouraging about Jaden Akin's performance, because, I mean, they are a little thin at the wing. I mean, if you had to say
a lot since.
Kind of an area.
Don't mince words. A lot since. but I think I'm with you. Go ahead.
And we'll get to Jaden Akins in a second. But, yeah, what did you think of Max Christie? 6 points, six rebounds, though, two assists, 1 for 6 for 3 with a block.
I think everything except shooting the ball, he was great.
Yeah.
And those shots were all good shots. They looked good. MSU did not shoot the ball well from three. They were 4 for 19 on the night as a team. Mm-hmm. But I have zero problem. And I can't imagine Izzo would as well. They took great shots, and a lot of those were just in and out. They were, you know, they're going to go. You get that quality of shot, they're going to go. So I was pleased with the way Max Christie played despite his not hitting shots. As you say, six rebounds, that's important. He had two assists. He had a block. I thought he was pretty engaged defensively. You know, those are, and he's unflappable. Stephen Bardo is the color guy tonight. Made mention of it at one point. He said, you can't tell if he's mad. You can't tell if he's happy. I think that's true. And I think that's something that, you know, you always want some emotion, and Michigan State teams generally play with a lot of it. But at the same time, for this team, Bardo made the same comment about Gabe Brown, and I think that's true as well.
Mm-hmm.
You need some guys to be level-headed. And with this team, I think that's an approach that's going to serve them well. Yeah, there are times to be emotional, and we'll see it. Guaranteed we'll see it out of these guys. But I like the demeanor early on. Max Christie is definitely at the top of the chart in that regard. So we're 2 games in, and Max really hasn't broken out yet. It's coming. Mm-hmm. If I were Butler, I'd be nervous. Because he's got an offensive explosion coming.
It's a matter of time. A really good feel for spacing.
Yes.
That 1-3, I think, I think one of the threes he hit, you could see him kind of just shift over just a little bit on the elbow just to give him enough space to get that off. Like, that's pretty good for your second game, just being able to feel. I mean, that's a natural thing he's got there.
This is what, you know, people talked about in regard to him, that apart from his skills, which are considerable, he's a very smart basketball player, and I agree with you. You see evidence of his basketball IQ show up a lot.
Mm.
So better things to come from him, but not a bad night.
Yeah. So then at point guard, Tyson Walker, 20 minutes, 9 points, a rebound, 5 assists, hit that 3 at the end of the half that was really nice, and a block and a steal, but 3 turnovers.
That number is unfair, and so are the assists. I didn't count them, but I will guarantee you he got – assist counting is much like fast break points.
Mm.
It can be a little questionable at times because, for example, if a guy takes a dribble after you pass to him, technically that's not supposed to be an assist.
Mm-hmm.
Practically speaking, it gets credited as an assist a lot. And he had a number of those. He also had a number of plays which should have been assists that Michigan State blew the shot.
Mm-hmm.
One of his 3 turnovers should not have been a turnover. And Izzo was laying into the officials. When he dribbled the ball off his foot, Michigan State did get it back. That was not a turnover. That's just a horrendous call. That's not the rule. It wasn't a kick. He dribbled it off his foot. Mm-hmm. So his numbers were even better. His game was even better than those numbers suggest. I liked his game. It's not where it needs to be yet. There were still some instances. There was one early in the second half, and I'm going to bet it's why he got pulled. It happened in the first 4-minute stretch where the ball came to him in the corner. He was wide open. He didn't pull the trigger. Instead, he tried to extend the play, dribble out, and then ended up committing an actual turnover.
Yeah.
And he got yanked at the next stoppage of play, and A.J. Hogard came in. I'll guarantee you that's what it was for. I was encouraged, though, because it was better than we've seen in either the exhibitions or the Kansas game. He was more aggressive. He needs to continue down this path.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he's in there, I have a comfort level in their half-court offense that I do not have with Hogard. Now, Hogard did some nice things tonight there. He made, we'll talk about, when we talk about him, he made the best play of his MSU career, in my opinion, tonight. And it wasn't on a basket that he had. But I'm still not there yet. Tyson Walker is the guy they've got to have playing at a high level if their half-court execution is going to be as good as it needs to be. I did really like what he did defensively in this game. And again, we know the opposition, blah, 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 whatever. I can only evaluate what I see. And what I saw tonight is evidence of the guy that I think I've been expecting on the defensive end. He can apply ball pressure without taking chances in a way that MSU hasn't had at that position in a while.
Yeah.
Tum-Tum Nairn could do some of that. But Walker is, I think he's a guy who's going to take a toll that way on opposing guards before this season's through. I can see it coming. Because it saps you of not just physical energy, but mental energy. It's not that you're trapping against somebody, you're trying to force turnovers, but you just wear them down.
Yeah.
And he's capable of doing that in a way they really haven't had in a long time.
Something you constantly got to think about, that hand coming in and slapping it away.
Yep. Exactly. And I think that's going to be something that we're really going to grow to appreciate from Tyson Walker. But I think it was definitely a positive step for him. Definitely.
And he also had that lob pass.
Yep.
And I don't know what games Bardo has been watching, but he seemed to think Gabe Brown does that every single game. We haven't seen those type of lobs.
Well, I think that, and they did have some, I think they had one in the Kansas game, but it was Hogard. I think these two guys are, you're right about that. It was one thing that, for whatever reason, Cassius just was never really able to connect on very well. They haven't had a guy that effective throwing lobs, again, in a while. And I think both of these guys have shown signs that they're going to be better in that area.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, occasionally they'll get positives, like the lobs, like the slip lobs and stuff to Bingham and stuff, but not like baseline.
High feeds is what we're talking about. No, Cassius was great at the lobs where he'd be in the lane and he'd find X or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
That he was fantastic at. But we're talking about very specifically high feed lobs from, say, the top of the key area.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that used to be a huge staple of Michigan State basketball. I mean, go back to the Elite Eight game against Iowa State in 2000, the championship year, and watch Mo Cleaves and Mo Peterson connecting on that in a very big moment, if you want a highlight.
Yeah.
But they used, that was regular. It was, you know, when Richardson was here, and Shannon Brown and Mo Agar, those guys, that was a staple of MSU basketball. And it has been missing. Despite the fact that even when Miles was here, they didn't do it a lot. Not successfully. They would try, but the execution was always off. So, yeah, good sign. Because they've got guys that can go get it. I mean, Bainham, just because of his length. Brown, because of his length and his leaping ability. Jaden Akins. I mean, I think Max Christie. They've got some guys you can use that way. If the passes are there, if they're accurate and on time. And so, good signs.
Mm-hmm. And Joey, 22 minutes, 12 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 for 8, 2 for 4 from 3, hit both of his free throws, a block, 2 steals.
Really good. That's the Joe. And what I liked about him is, as much as anything, is I thought he played a very smart game. If you remember heading into last season, that's what Izzo compared him to, Draymond Green, in terms of his understanding. And we really didn't see that very much last year. We saw Joey Hauser that just, for the most part, there were exceptions, but for the most part, just seemed out of sync a little bit. Tonight, he was very much in sync. He had a pass he whipped out across the court to Gabe Brown. Now, Gabe missed the shot, if I recall correctly, but the pass was incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not using that word lightly. It was incredible. The vision and the execution to get it there as quickly as he did cross court, was really, really impressive. And then he had a number. He had a high low, I think, with Marble. It was really nice. He played well. He played smartly. He played within the offense, what they want to do. The 12 rebounds was great to see. Just a really, 2 for 4 from three. That's nice. He was the only guy who was really dialed in. Good stuff.
Yeah. And then Margie, 18 minutes, 12 points, 8 rebounds, 5 for 7 from the floor, 2 for 3 from the line, 2 blocks, 2 steals, 2 turnovers.
His first half was crazy good. Second half, he didn't do as much. I want to say he had 10 and 7 in the first half. And then the second half, he didn't produce quite as much. But I really like the way he played in this game. You know what? He had a huge size advantage, and he went out there and played the way that you want a guy with a huge size advantage to play. He looked to take Western inside, and he did that and was successful. And I think it was another really nice game from him. Now, again, 18 minutes. I'm hopeful, but that's not a sign of where Michigan State thinks he is in terms of conditioning, and they don't think he can go more than that. I'm hopeful that this is about, just these early games parsing out the minutes, but the fact that it was that way against Kansas, too, does make me wonder. I would like to see Marcus Bynum edging up more toward 24, 25. That would be my hope, because I think he, and I'm giving full credit to Julius Marble, who I thought played a solid game again. Mati Sissoko did some things tonight in limited minutes. But I think Michigan State is a different team with Marcus Bynum out there. At both ends, they are a different team. And I really do think they need more of him in terms of minutes than we've seen thus far. I would just like to see it edge up a little bit. I'm not crazy. Yeah. We're never going to see 30 minutes a night from Marcus Bynum, but get me, at least 4 or 5 more minutes than we're seeing thus far, and I think that's going to bode well. That's if he's capable of doing it. Izzo and his staff know better than anybody. They may really be of the mind that he's not capable. And that would be unfortunate, but if that's how it is, that's how it is. But I've been very happy with the way he's played now. This was a different kind of challenge, too. Western, let's be honest, Michigan State's had big men in the past who have struggled in these kind of games with smaller, quicker opponents. Marcus did not, and it helped that Titus Wright got in foul trouble, immediately.
Yeah.
But Marcus drew those fouls.
Yeah.
So...
So Malik Hall comes off the bench, 20 minutes. He gets 8 points, 3 rebounds, 3 for 6 from the floor, and missed all 3 of his 3-pointers, but hit a couple free throws.
He didn't do a lot statistically in the second half, but in the first half, I really liked his game. He had that play early in transition where he Euro-stepped.
Yeah.
That's something we haven't seen a lot from Malik Hall, and it's a good sign that he's feeling confident. And that he can do so. I mean, we all know he's a versatile guy. He's capable of doing a lot of things to help you win. I did not think he was very good against Kansas. He was a lot better tonight, and that needs to continue. If Michigan State can get this Malik Hall, this Joey Hauser at the four, in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And Joey's going to pitch in a little on the wing as well. Or I'm sorry, Malik will. That's going to help things a lot.
And then A.J. Hoggard, 18 minutes, 7 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 for 5.
I will tell you, we saw similar things to what we saw against Kansas and him, looking to get the ball to the rim and take contact and convert and all that. And that's all nice, and that's good. I don't pretend otherwise. But to me, the most impressive thing that I saw him do all night, and maybe in his MSU career, was there was a play – I think it was in the second half, early-ish in the second half, where he broke down the defense, got into the lane, and had a wraparound to Bynum.
Yeah.
That is a different level of play than we have seen from him, and this is why I think that. My concern with Hoggard, for as much as he's shown early on, is that most of what has made him effective is in two areas. It's in transition, both for himself and passing the ball ahead for others, and that matters. and then it's getting the ball to the rim himself. What you haven't seen as much of is him really making plays for others, the offense running like clockwork. And the reason that matters is as they progress this season, as they get into the Big Ten, those opportunities to get to the rim and finish are not going to be there as often. They're not going to be as easy when he does get there because he's going to be going against, you know, monsters inside. We've talked about it a lot already. That's on top of the fact that it's just going to be tougher to get there against Big Ten defenses. Transition opportunities we know are not going to be as frequent. You know, so all of these things I think are true. And that's why I am very much, I'm still on the, you know, of the feeling of the in the position that Tyson Walker needs to be the guy. And I think he showed a lot of signs of that tonight. I was impressed, especially with his first half, the way the offense, like the last 6-7 minutes of the half, the way the offense clicked with him out there. But I will say this, if we start to see more moments like the one we just talked about from Hogard, then you really got something. Because that's the kind of thing I haven't seen enough of from him. You know, and it's, they need it. That's the kind of thing they have to have. They also need him to be efficient in pick and roll. And it's going to be harder for him because people aren't going to respect him as a shooter until he makes them. So that makes it more difficult. You can still find ways to play it well. Think back to Xavier Simpson, you know, when he really struggled as a shooter but was still pretty effective in pick and roll. Hogard's got to take a page out of that book because I just am not convinced he's going to be a good enough shooter to force defenses to really respect him. But that play to me was a hopeful sign, much more important to me than the points he scored tonight. Yeah. Was that, you know?
And then Jaden Akins, 16 points, or I'm sorry, 16 minutes, 9 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, 4 for 5. Hit a free throw, a steal.
You know, his first 5 points were kind of, you know, grit points. Like he was working on the offensive boards, whatever, right place, right time, you know, hit a layup, you know, got a free throw. That was all fine. But later in the second half, he had a sequence very quickly where he had an offensive rebound for a dunk that showed you why, and I've talked about it. If you consider him a point guard, and I think eventually he will be a guy that they'll use on ball. They haven't done it a lot yet because they're, you know, it's Walker and Hogard they're working with, but he has athletic horsepower unlike anybody they've had at that position in the Izzo era for sure.
That play is really where it just absolutely
you saw it
out like, whoa.
You saw it. Yep. It was really really, really impressive. And it goes along with his mentality generally. This is a kid who is going to be a factor on the boards. We talked about the way Max Christie rebounded. Gabe Brown was great tonight. So was Jaden Akins. 2 offensive rebounds and the one for the putback. But then very shortly after that, he had a play that I've seen him make a lot in high school and in AAU. Tonight was the first time he did it successfully at Michigan State, where he used his handle to create space for about a 15, 16-foot jumper and just drained it.
Yeah.
That, to me, was a sign, the fact that he tried to make that play and he converted it, of improved confidence and being more comfortable. And I think it's a matter of time with Jaden Akins.
Mm.
And when it happens, when that comes into play, the Big Ten is going to have a problem on its hands because Jaden Akins has both athleticism and skills enough to make himself a really, really difficult opponent to deal with. Mm-hmm. So small, this is what I'm talking about. Those two plays apply no matter who the opponent is. They'd apply if he was going up against walk-ons in practice, honestly.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why this, oh, it's only Western. Shut up. You're not paying attention to the right things. You know, yeah, nobody's doing cartwheels because they want a game by a lot of points, but it's individually, it's these moments. It's the things that they show themselves being capable of doing. That's what matters about it. And Jaden Akins is a prime example of that, the way he played tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be some exciting plays coming out of him.
Yep,
there's no doubt in my mind after watching
that. Well,
you
talk about the high feed lobs. That's another guy.
Yeah.
They can run that for.
And they almost got that. I thought he was going to throw that one down. He brought it down and then laid it up, which was actually probably the smart thing to do.
Yep.
But just for them to even attempt that tells you what they know he can do.
Yep.
So, Marble, 14 minutes, 5 points, 6 rebounds, 2 for 5. A couple blocks and a steal.
Yeah, you know, he didn't score as much as he did against Kansas, but I'm okay with the way Julius played. The 6 rebounds, you know, that's 2 straight games where he's kind of hung in there on the boards, and they need that out of him. You know, if he's going to be the backup and he's going to play those minutes, you know, what did he play tonight? He played 14 minutes. They need that kind of production from him. I thought defensively, you know, again, smaller opponent, you might think that you'd be tested. Again, Titus Wright was in foul trouble, so that helped. But, you know, so far so good from Julius. I still, you know, the tale's going to be told over, you know, multiple weeks and games with him. But so far in these first 2 games, he's shown me at least some signs of being improved enough defensively and on the boards to make him worthy of those minutes. And that's a good thing because, you know, Sissoko still has a world of potential and he shows you flashes like he did tonight, but we know he's not quite there yet. My hope is that they get him there by Big Ten time, you know, by January, February, that he's ready to play a larger role and is more consistent in his production. But, you know, until then, they need Julius Marble to be a guy who can hold it down.
Marble looked like he's getting a lot more comfortable in the pick and roll. He's setting good picks. He looks like his timing's on.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I thought tonight they showed much, much better than they did against Kansas. Now, again, you could say opponent, but in terms of execution stuff, timing of picks, timing of a guard going, all that's tough to do, and it matters, and I agree with you. That's another area where, you know, I think we were all very quick to think, well, Julius Marble, you look at his size, you look at, you know, the what appeared to be the athletic versatility, and you think, okay, maybe this guy can be another Xavier Tillman type or some facsimile thereof. But those areas, defense, rebounding, setting picks, having an understanding of how the offense needs to function, those are all things that made Xavier Tillman the player that he was. Mm-hmm. Julius Marble's actually probably a little better offensive player. He's a better post, has a better post game. And I'd say certainly at a similar point in their careers, he's probably a little more consistent jump shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those other areas, he hasn't even been close. But if he continues to show this kind of gradual improvement, yeah, it's going to make this whole thing function better. I think Bainham has become a vastly improved screener, by the way.
Mm.
Vastly. He's not ever going to be Tillman, but much, much better than he used to be. And so those things are all going to matter. Believe it.
Yep. And then Matty Sissoko, 8 minutes, 3 points, 2 rebounds, hit a free throw and a block.
Yeah, but the play that you really had to love was that post move. I mean, it was nice for his bucket. Yeah, that was perfect. You know, he carved out position and didn't hesitate, and it looked smooth. I mean, that is what you want to see. And again, with him, it's going to come, I think, in fits and starts. And I hope that they're in position where they can continue to give him, you know, these spot minutes. I would imagine that is the plan. I hope so, because I think that's going to help him. You know, I'm not advocating playing him for development purposes. That's not Izzo's game plan, and I don't think it's smart. But I hope that he's able to continue to earn a couple of turns here and there, because I think that's going to help his slope of improvement. And, you know, he shows all the signs, doesn't he? I mean, he's active. He obviously gives you an ability to protect the rim, and if he can continue to hone that post game and make moves like that, you got something. And I think we're going to see
it. He runs the floor hard, too.
Yep, that's what I mean. The effort level is always there.
And he'll be coming in when players are right at the edge of their fatigue level on the other team. And then they got to come in, and he just runs like a deer down the
Yep. No, I agree. And it also helps. I think it's what can help him be if he can get to the point that he's able to play consistently larger amounts of minutes, it can help him be a really, really good rebounder because he's got length. He's an explosive enough athlete. He's very strong. He's tough. We know all that. But his work rate, his motor, that's what you can't really teach, I don't think. I think guys tend to inherently kind of be that way, and he is. And that's going to help him as to be that kind of force.
Yeah. He has the ability to come in against some of these bigger guys in the Big Ten and just frustrate them, if nothing else.
Well, and as we've spent a lot of time talking about already, and we've yet to play a Big Ten game, that is going to matter. Because you are night in, night out going to see these behemoths. And, you know, Michigan State, fortunately, as of yet, these first two games, we haven't had to deal with anybody being in really serious foul trouble. The closest to that was when Tyson Walker got two against Kansas in the first half. None of the big men yet, but we know it's coming. So and that's apart from just fatigue and, you know, all the other reasons why you want to play guys. But having a third guy that you can trust for at least in short stints to throw in there against a Coburn or a Dickinson or, you know, Purdue guys, that's a nice card to play. There are not a lot of, you know, I won't say yet that Michigan State's fives are ranked at the top of the conference yet by any stretch as a group. That position is way too deep in this league to say that. But they're getting better, and I don't know if I believe that there are many teams that have a third center, certainly with the potential of a Mati Sissoko, you know.
And then Pierre Brooks got in there, I believe. I don't think he saw any time in the Kansas game.
He didn't play against Kansas.
6 minutes. He had the speaking of Xavier Simpson, he kind of had that running hook shot that was pretty sweet looking.
It was a nice move. And he's a very smart player. The deal with Pierre is just it's going to take some time for him to get comfortable, I think. That's one thing. I think he's still trying to round himself into shape athletically, or conditioning-wise, I mean. You know, he's getting better, but I think that still needs to come. And then, of course, what's going to be the determining factor for him is how well he can defend. But you saw a couple of really smart, clever plays, and that finish was one of them. And that's ultimately what's going to make him be a very effective player at Michigan State, in my opinion. It's a matter of time with him. I have absolutely no reason to believe that he's not going to be a very good player in time at Michigan State. Just a matter of when.
All right. Well, that about covers it for the players. Keys, dribble penetration defense. Without B. Artis White, there wasn't a whole lot of options for them to penetrate.
I mean, they were good, but it's really hard to evaluate it because the one guy that's capable of creating that for them, you know, wreaking a little havoc, got hurt in what I think it was the first. Well, they got him. What do they have him credited with? Yeah, 4 minutes played. So it was in the first 5 minutes. You know, he had. I think Stephen Bardo might have been right that there was that play where he had a steal on the sideline and took it in for a layup, and it looked like something happened on the layup. He made it, but it was a few minutes. He played a couple minutes after that, but then, you know, you saw him when Tyson Walker was taking the ball down the lane and he just kind of stopped moving and clearly was hurt, and he went to the locker room and never came back into the game. That's a huge deal for Western for their season. obviously. I don't know the severity of it. I did not realize, and they talked about it on the broadcast, apparently he had been hurt in the preseason and has only been back to practice for like a week, 10 days, something like that. So it's possible that it is a residual issue. I'm not sure. I don't know enough. But, yeah, you know, you can only play against the guys you're playing against. And so Michigan State did a very good job, generally speaking, of keeping people in front of them. You know, Western ended up shooting 10 free throws, so they didn't draw many fouls. And in the second half, I don't think Michigan State picked up their second team foul until like the 7-minute mark. It was something like that. They picked up a few late, but it was they didn't really do any damage that way.
Yeah.
But
yeah, only
you know,
12
again,
personal
we know
fouls
that,
in this game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we know again that they weren't tested the way we had expected them to be tested.
Mm-hmm. And then turnovers looked ugly at the beginning, but it did settle down eventually, which what looks like 13.
Yep. Yeah, but much better in the second half. You know, and Michigan State was. This is the thing. I think Michigan State was playing pretty fast. So it kind of also blows the doors off a little bit, this notion that, well, they commit a lot of turnovers because they're constantly trying to push the ball. Well, they were pushing tonight.
Yeah.
And after a bad start, and again, it was some of them at least were these plays where it just was a lack of concentration. They weren't really, you know, instances where Michigan State was really trying to make a big play and just missed, or there were a couple of those, but a lot of them were of the variety. You know, Gabe got called for a couple of travels, which, frankly, I thought, given the way they've supposedly changed the enforcement this year, I thought were bad calls. There were a lot of bad calls tonight, by the way. Not that it mattered, but just if you're evaluating the way that a crew handles their business, these guys were not good. In a closer game, you would have been much more frustrated. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
But there were just some, just still too many of the, you know, WTF variety. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a play where AJ just dribbled into a steal. Tyson had one of those. You know, they just got to be sharper. They got to be better.
Yeah, how's
but
it kind
not
of cutting across the court?
Well, that ended up not being a turnover.
Oh, was that not?
Yeah, they gave him the ball back. They had originally called it, and I'm not sure what the basis was of them reversing that call, because honestly, that was one I thought it looked like they got right.
Yeah.
Because he did trip over Marble, and the ball went out of bounds, so I'm not sure why they changed it, but maybe Marble got pushed. I didn't see enough of it to know, but anyway, better. We'll call it marginal improvement there.
Yeah. The 13 was Walker.
Better, you know, as we talked about. I think Tyson is slowly starting to get it, what Michigan State needs out of him. I thought that play to end the half
was
the best
good.
We've seen from him.
Yeah.
Right? Well, pick and roll, gets himself, the three is available, and he just, no hesitation, just nails it. And I thought he was a little more insistent at kind of probing the defense, looking to get to the rim. Encouraging, not nearly where he's got to be for this team to really compete in the Big Ten, but it showed progress. And again, I'm not talking about, well, does he have the capability to do these things? I know he does. This is about mindset. I still think he's a little too focused, and you saw it in a couple of instances tonight. He's still a little too focused at trying to get other people involved. But not even in a, even that's a misnomer, because it's not like you're seeing him, you know, try to create a play for somebody else. It's more that he's just willing to shuffle the ball along. I'd be okay if he was getting in the lane instead of taking a layup, he was looking to feed a teammate for a shot, but it's not even as much that. It's just a little more passivity than you need. But he's shown improvement, so
yeah.
We'll give it a check mark for that.
Defend the arc. They were only 5 for 28 from 3-point, but 28's quite a bit of shots up.
Yeah. Look, I mentioned that when you looked at what these guys have done in their previous stops or even the handful of guys that are back, it added up to me to be a team that's going to rely on the three a lot. And so I'm not, you know, they only took, I think, 18 or 19 against Hope. But as I think I mentioned it in preview, they're playing a Division III school. So they probably went inside a lot more. Tonight, you figured the odds were going to be better that you saw them look to take more threes because, frankly, they were going to have to. And that was before Be'Artis White went down. When he got hurt, look, it became obvious that was the only way they were going to generate points. Was via the three, and Michigan State guarded it pretty well. They should have, because there wasn't a lot of other threat out there to deal with. And, you know, 5 for 28 is a pretty good defensive number. So, as I mentioned, the key to me in this game, mostly about that, was just that they showed balance, that they were able to not let Western go crazy from three while still keeping them out of the lane. Mm-hmm. And they did that. Now, we know the job was made a lot easier, but they were, remember, they were 4 for their first 8. So
yeah.
That means they were 1 for 20 after those first, whatever it was, 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty dismal stuff. You would like to think you'd hit a couple more than that just based on luck.
Right. Yeah. The fifth key was transition.
Yeah, you know, I thought pretty good. Now I'm pulling up the stats here for MSU. Let's see what they got credited with. Well, they got credited with 25 fast break points. And again, I don't trust that stat, but in this case, I think it matches well what my eyes told me.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State was pretty insistent in getting the ball up court, and of course they dominated on the glass. I mean, I don't know what the final rebounding margin was. They had 58 total rebounds to Western's 28-30 and 18-12 on the offensive boards. By the way, Michigan State had like a 56% offensive rebounding rate, which is crazy good.
Wow.
But again, you'd expect it because this was a smaller team and their best big man was in foul trouble. So I think that in terms of pushing tempo, the equation was there. They controlled the glass. They were insistent on it. Both point guards, I think, looked like they had the right mentality. I thought everybody else ran the floor reasonably well. So the intent was there, which is all you can really ask for in a game like this.
Yeah, and the big got involved in it a couple times too.
Yep.
Them running.
Yep. What right. You have to see, that's vintage Michigan State basketball.
Well, you know, any final thoughts on this one? Really balanced game offensively.
Just a nice, solid performance out of Michigan State. You know, you don't go crazy with it because you understand all the reasons why you don't. But that also doesn't mean that you disregard everything that you saw. I think there were a lot of good things on display tonight. And again, that comes on the heels of a Kansas game where, yes, there were problems, but as we talked about, there were positive things as well. And I thought that those positive things, you know, the way they got into transition and the way that the bigs played, I thought those things were showing up again tonight. So that's good. You know, it gets tougher. The next game they've got, now the nice thing is they've got a few days off, which isn't always the case at this time of year.
Yeah.
But they're off until Wednesday, where they'll go to Indianapolis and play at Butler as part of the, Gavitt games. Yeah. I was trying to think of Dave Gavitt's name. Yeah. The Gavitt games. Michigan State has only played in it once, and most people will probably remember it. It was in the 1920 season where they had some heroics from Malik Hall, Cassius Winston, to pull out a big win over a very good Seton Hall team in their building. And Michigan State is on the road again.
Oh, that's right. That was Gavitt.
Yep. That was the first time they played in the event. I am on record as not being a fan of the Gavitt games, and I really hope it does get scrapped, because with the Big Ten moving to 20 conference games, that's two more games than you used to have guaranteed against high major opponents. And then the problem is, on top of that, MSU is locked into the Champions Classic. They're locked into the Big Ten ACC Challenge. And you know that every year they're going to play at least two, more often three games in a holiday tournament. That's a lot of high major games. And I am not advocating for a Jim Boeheim style schedule where you play tomato cans 11 times. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, but Michigan State has plenty of high major games already that they're locked into every single season. So adding one more to that, I don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not making schedules. So they will go to Hinkle Fieldhouse, which I'm sure you're going to hear Tom Izzo make a big deal out of, because this is exactly the kind of thing that appeals to him, the history of the game. And, you know, I think he'll make it a big deal for his team. You know, and Butler wasn't great last year. We'll see what I haven't really dialed into Butler just yet.
They're 2-0 so far. They won tonight, but.
Yeah, I would expect it to be a challenging game, if for no other reason than you're playing a Big East team on the road in a building where they're historically very, very good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the equation right now for MSU going in there. That's going to be a tough game to win. And it would be a good win if they can get it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get the preview up for that one probably Monday or so, maybe Tuesday.
Yep.
And until next time, the Final Four is not on the schedule.